Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we're joined by the visionary founder of the Sales Rebellion. They're leading a movement to transform the sales industry. With a deep-rooted belief that sales has lost its way, he's dedicated to putting people back at the forefront of the profession. From being the copier warrior to a sales trainer, they've brought about the Sales Rebellion, a community that champions meaningful responses and thinking outside of the box. Today's guest goes against the grain and thinks outside of the box. It's a pleasure to have them on today. It's Dale Dupree. Dale, how are you?
Cheers. That's one epic introduction. I'll pay you later, I guess, is what I'm supposed to say there, actually, right? But it's a pleasure to be on here with you guys. I'm excited. For anybody listening, I met Jack because he came into a comment stream and talked shit to me. And
it was very aggressive, wasn't it?
It was intense, and now we're buddies. So this is pretty exciting for me. It's been on my bucket list to get on this podcast, actually, at this point. So I'm excited about today.
And there's going to be no arguments. I feel like it's all going to be love.
Do you know what I was
poking the bear at? Can you remember? I can't remember. I talk a lot of shit on LinkedIn.
Sorry about that. It was specifically about relationships and sales. So it was basically that you. And listen, I also want to say, and I think this is where we, like, in our DMs, nobody got to see the DMs, but where we hit a common ground, which is that the problem is that too many people are out talking about the fluff around sales as if somehow it creates success. And it doesn't. Because sales is always sales. Sales is always, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a person trusting you enough to fix the issue that they have or to get to the place that they desire to get using your product or service. And giving you money, that's what sales is. So when people, you know, when they talk about, when they harp on things like relationships, a lot of times it becomes very fluffy. And it can seem as if, you know, this whimsical world is created and that if you just build a relationship with everybody, everything will be fine. But ultimately the purpose of the post was based around this identity of trust and credibility. Two things that we ignore the most in sales in this day and age because we become so transactional. And so when people hear stories like the ones that the copier warrior tells, aka Dale Dupree, they usually are like, what? Like, how's that even possible? And that's probably fluff. And ultimately, at the same time, too, there's no scalability in relationships or trust or credibility. And people lose their mind about that, where I just don't care about scalability. I don't care about anything but trust and credibility because I care more about my reputation than I do the transaction. At the end of the day, I would rather tell somebody, hey, I don't want to do business with you than burn through a list, churn through numbers, dial people until I'm dead and make a ton of money because the money will be worthless. It will be spent on things that are strictly material, no experiences, no community, nothing to do with anything outside of myself. And that's not the kind of life that I ultimately want to live. So there's the full recap of the post and everything that goes along with it for the listening audience that doesn't care probably as they're listening to this. They're just like, why are we talking about this right now? But hey, we did it. So let's give ourselves
a round of applause. Yeah, good. I feel like relationships is such a fluffy word. And it's just like I'm going to befriend everybody in the hope that one day somebody will like me enough that they'll come and do business with me. And maybe we can get onto there, but I guess taking it back, Dale, who are you and what problem do you solve for people that don't know you?
That's a great question. To really understand that, you have to understand my origins. In 1984, my father left the box store of copier sales. So think of like Office Depot or Staples, you know, or some big office supply store in today's day and age. My dad, he worked for a very corporate organization like that, very large, the kind of place that most people want to end up and work at because there's a lot of safety and security there. But he took a massive risk and basically went across the border past his non-compete to do business ethically and with integrity. And started his own organization from scratch, from nothing. And he had a mortgage and two kids. And my mom got pregnant like several months later after this as well too, right? So that like here's my dad, you know, just basically like pursuing something that most people called him crazy over. And that's where my upbringing comes in, that I was raised by a man that just saw the world much differently. He thought differently about sales. He thought differently about people. He thought differently about life. And he instilled that in us in the way that he lived, not just the way he told us to live, because my dad never really truly, even though he was a great teacher, he never told us to do anything. He let us figure it out for ourselves. And I think that that's the power in what it is that we've built today through the Sales Rebellion, is that, yes, we want to train and help and enable people to be better in sales, whether it's an SDR, an account executive, whatever your stupid role is that your boss gave you to make you feel better. You're a salesperson is a salesperson to me. And ultimately, those are the people that we look to serve. And the way that we serve them is to help them with a couple things. Number one being that my dad was very intentional about self-development. So as he taught me sales, it wasn't just, here's how you talk on the phone when you make a cold call. It was a belief system around that phone call in the first place. It was an understanding of meeting people where they were and the principled nature of sales more so than anything else, which ties back into the psychology of things, not just for your own mindset, but ultimately for the way that other people perceive you in your actions. And from that, my dad also helped me with this spark of creativity as well too. But because my dad believed that attention was the currency of sales, and that, the exchange, and that time was the currency. So if I could get your time and you would give me your attention, that 90% of the job is done at that point. From there on out, it's up to the person listening to decide whether or not they trust me enough and feel credible through my services and experiences to buy. So what we do is we essentially are the anti-sales of sales training because of it, because we don't sit around talking about metrics and all the things that you have to do to, from the perspective of the world, to be better at sales. But instead we talk about, like, how do you stand out from the fray? How do you become the literal 1%, not just the proverbial one, but the person that takes risks, that dares mighty things, that does things that are unpopular in the sales world because it's not scalable or transactional, right? But instead it seeks to build something much greater than just $1 million in your bank account. It seeks to build that kind of wealth through relationships. Yeah, that buzzword, right, that we used earlier. It seeks to build that kind of wealth through experiences, through family, through legacy, through things that go beyond just the transaction. The transaction is the byproduct, right? Ultimately, if we're building something great in our lives, then we're doing that with passion, with fervent passion, with something that nobody else has in our profession or our competitors have that we go up against on a daily basis. The byproduct is the outcome. People will want to be around you. People will want to buy from you. And those are your people ultimately as well too. So you're building a tribe by doing so, which is something that after 25 years of being in sales, you'll look back on and be like, thank God I did that, because now I have more than just transactions. I have resources. I have friendships. I have the ability to be able to tap into networks. I have so much more than just money. And that's what we do for people.
Okay, so it sounds like you're on quite a big mission. I guess, what are the boxes that you're trying to tick? When will the mission be complete?
It won't, bro. Like, I am building something that I will never see the end of. Like, I will never see the sunset of what it is that I truly am trying to create for salespeople. I will never experience it. It will not happen in my generation. I believe that it was started generations before me, as a matter of fact. Guys like Og Bandino, Dale Carnegie is a good example. Some of Zig Ziglar stuff as well. I feel like there was a generation, you know, right behind all of us that was trying to do this as well too, but just got lost in the fray of business and the box of business. What I want to give people is ultimate freedom. I think that sales is a buzzword for making money, when ultimately it should be a reality that you can have ultimate freedom of time, ultimate freedom of self, ultimate freedom of finance. There's much more than just money that's involved with it. And I just don't think that I'll ever see that sunset, bro. I think that I'll die on this hill. And I hope that somebody else will pick up the sword when I'm gone and will charge forward just as I have into the dark and, you know, murky waters that I'm in with the same kind of passion. And if they don't, then shit, at least I tried.
Beautiful. That's the right kind of mission. The one that you never see the end of. Purposeful. I'm sorry. I've never been mean to you on LinkedIn, Dale, and we've never met before. Maybe let's see how we get on this podcast. Maybe we'll be mean to each other later on down the line. I wanted to ask you, obviously, you're speaking to a lot of different salespeople through all sorts of different means. I think sometimes what people like about these sort of podcasts is they get that moment of I'm not alone. So what are you seeing that modern salespeople are struggling with the most right now?
I think the number one topic that we hear from salespeople on the most is prospecting, it's outbound motions. And I think that people have become so boxed into the belief that an outbound motion is just like strictly picking up the phone and dialing or strictly sending an email that they've gotten to this place of discontent more than anything, or they've gotten to this place where they don't believe that they're good at sales because of the percentages, right? The numbers, it all comes down to the numbers, right? That the number one issue that we hear from people is when they tell us their conversion rates, right? On outbound motions, they'll go, 5 years ago, this is what the numbers were. And then they're like, but today, you know, this is what they are. And it's very interesting to me that ultimately what the root of that is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And we can actually apply that to most of the problems in sales right now, outside of just this one that we get reached out to about the most, which is, you know, probably like what people are probably hearing me say that this is what I hear and thinking, sure, like that's going to be a perpetual problem. There's always going to be an issue with outreach to some capacity. I think it's the worst state that it's ever been, though, in my personal opinion, based on studies, based on just like the algorithm of data that we have that's modern. And also the understanding of like I was selling in 2009. I was door knocking, right? It's commission only. And I know exactly what the results look like back then as compared to now, right? And that wasn't that long ago. But ultimately, you know, it's a short amount of time. And so if in just 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, we can have this type of outcome, right? This bad of an outcome. Imagine what it's going to be like 10 years from now if we continue to perpetuate these problems, right? But not to go into a full-on dissertation about your question, but I really truly believe that a lot of people get out of sales because they can't outbound properly. They start doing things like saying, can I get into more of like a customer success role or a customer management role? And they use like the outbounding side of their resume to just get the role, right? That's all they literally are. They're like, hey, I'm a SDR and I've got 2 years doing it and here's all my successes. But like, if you talk to them behind the scenes and you're like, why are you trying to get another job? They're like, I hate this job so much. I can't get anybody on the phone. I can't set any appointments. This sucks. And these are the things that we hear the most that people are struggling with.
Okay, so then let's make Dale the god of sales. So if you could start today and fix that, what's the first thing you'd do to maybe at least start the journey of fixing that?
I think the problem is that we hinge our sales careers from an outbound perspective too much on the appointment itself. We're instead of being in a realization that like most people aren't going to meet with you the first time you talk to them, that we're in this expectation state of everybody should meet with me after I get off the phone with them. And so I think it's a mindset shift ultimately, but also an understanding of like how sales actually works, that sales is all about time and timing. Like if what you are offering is not at the right time for the person listening, doesn't matter what you have. Doesn't matter if it sounds good, feels good. It doesn't matter if your pitch is incredible. I dropped a 6-foot cardboard cutout of myself. I did 20 of these, stabbing a copy machine with a sword in the middle of the woods with this text up at the top of it, like massive. It's like going to a movie theater, right? Kind of thing that said, every morning he wakes up believing this is his job, with a note to these decision makers. I set 19 out of 20 appointments off that drop. But if you ask me how many sales I got immediately, the answer is none. And the only reason that these people met with me was because I created this ultimate curiosity, this extreme curiosity. But the one person, there's always this question that people are like, what about the one guy that didn't set an appointment? It was the wrong time. He was never gonna meet with me. With the rest of them, there was 6 to 12 to 18 months of time left before they would need me. This guy had this 20th guy, he had just signed a contract. There was zero reason for him to speak with me. Yet I had this thing that I did that was so audacious and so intense and so over the top that, you know, you would think that every single person would meet with you, right? But that's not the case. That's not how sales works. So I would change the expectation of sellers first and foremost. And I would start to help people to see and understand the belief around the impact that you can have on people just by building trust and credibility with them. I liked how Jack said earlier that relationships are a buzzword, because what are you going to be buddies and have Friday night pizza with everybody I had a guy one time that actually told me, I don't need any more friends, when I was prospecting him. And I said, well, I guess like my effort is on that level. Then, yeah, you know, and he said, absolutely it is. And I said, cool. So do you trust that effort? Because is it that you don't need new friends, or is it that you're afraid that if you let me in, that I'll fix the things that you have been continuing to put off for yourself? Is that what your real issue and worry is? Because really, relationships are about truth. They're about transparency, and they're about raw, honest, blunt communication. And that's what sales ultimately is and boils down to if we want to be super successful it. So there's another
are you okay,
missile strike on your question. Sorry for the 900 different things, but I get a little fired up on this. Obviously,
so. It's good. It's good. I've got to ask while we're there. Out of the 20, well, out of the 19, how many did you sell?
I sold 6 within the first 12 months, and I sold 2 more within the next 12 months. And the last of them, I sold them all. But the last of them, I actually had my team work, because I got promoted to VP of sales at that point. I had my team work them, and some of them took, you know, until the end of my tenure, like 7 years later. So,
but it worked. So like you played,
it's a long game, right? Like, yeah, it's a long game. If you want to do it right, it's a long game. And by, I should mention this, that some of them that like we eventually won, we lost first, right? We lost them and then won them at a different date as well too. Cause in the copier sales space too, you got to remember that it's this ongoing process. It's one after the other, after the other, after the other of letdown and upgrade is the thought process. So it's like, I got a 3-year lease, come and see me every 3 years, and you lose it 3 times, right? That's 9 years. You know, but like if you keep going back, you'll probably win it on that 12th year. And if your sales career is a long game focus, then that's currency for you and what it is that you're building.
Good. Okay. Dale, you've built a brand that isn't, like, I would say it definitely isn't boring, and it definitely isn't corporate. And I was speaking to somebody about this very recently, about the word fun in sales. And most people hear the word sales and think it is quite boring, it's pushy, or I need to be professional at all times. Why is it important to have fun with sales? And what can people be doing on a daily, weekly, yearly basis to bring that element of fun to their job?
I think we take ourselves too seriously, and which like translates to life to an extent, that like we take life a little too seriously in some instances. It's a short ride on this earth. And if you're not having fun, then you're probably a miserable piece of shit. And that sucks. So the idea for me is, it's more about happiness even than it is about fun. It's like fun is just an element, right? Like people say all the time to us, they say, I'm not creative, so I need your help. Or they say things like, I'm not funny, I don't have like humor built into me, and so I need your help. But really, like, we all have the ability to do those things. If we would just take ourselves less serious, if we would take life a little less serious as well too. And in most cases, when people say that, like, the number one thing that we work on is their traditional roles and their traditional life. We don't go straight to sales. We say, all right, so tell me about a Saturday. You know, and usually that same person says things like, I usually just kind of chill at the house and just like watch Netflix and kind of hang out and do my thing, right? These are the typical answers from the same people that are saying things like, I you know, I'm having a hard time having fun in my sales career. They don't know how to have fun at all, like in their life, and it translates. So really, it is about a lifestyle of happiness, just as much as it is about having fun in sales. I love the promo that you and my boy Lewis Sanford did recently, where you broke that door in the middle of some lot in the middle of your country somewhere. I'm sure that a constable, is that what you guys call them? The police, the popo? I'm sure that somebody was like, what is happening out there? And maybe made a phone call. I mean, it was like ridiculous enough to scare some people, I'm sure. But to me, like, viewing things like that and seeing true form of personality, right? The reputation of somebody being worn on their sleeve and through action, and the outcome that produces, to me, is something that's beautiful, because people become attracted to your fun, to your happiness, to the things that you're allowing them to perceive in your life, instead of just being this closed off, I sell SaaS, I sell it to HR directors, and it's this much money. Like, there's no fun in that at all whatsoever. So fun is the single most important thing, I think, in sales, because it produces happiness.
Sorry, I was enjoying listening to you then. I was just thinking, this guy needs to be on a stage somewhere educating the masses. Beautiful stuff. So I think you're the right person to ask this question to. You're probably going to give a lot of insight. So sometimes people say to me and Jack, oh, I couldn't sell the way you guys do because what I do is so transactional. And maybe it's so transactional and actually they're sat down with only 20 accounts that they're, that they can break into. They've been given these 20 accounts, they've got a transactional product or offering. Where do they start?
I think the first place to start is, for me, would be to understand, like, what is the standard of the world? I know it's a weird way to put it, but I look at the status quo as the place that I need to study first and foremost and understand the best. And so I need to understand, like, what is the status quo? What is the standard? What does the world tell me is normal? And from there, saying to myself, well, how can I achieve the goals that I want to achieve by not doing what the status quo tells me to do or the standard is placing in front of me in the first place? And so when I started to sell copiers, I think this is probably the best example, that I was told I have to do this many calls, I have to do this much work, I have to do this many emails. And this was by a manager that my dad had hired and was working inside of the organization at the time that kind of sucked. But it was cool. You know, my dad didn't want to be in the sales side. He needed to run the company as a CEO. So he gave this dude the mic, right? But I learned a lot from this guy, right? Because ultimately what I realized is that it really has nothing to do with all those things. The metrics can be important to us individually when it comes to what it is that ultimately, I should say, the goals that we desire to achieve. Because without the work, we have no outcome, period. And if we sit around and let the work come to us or do itself, or do the work for itself for us, then, you know, we're kind of like the expectation of getting something great from that should be pretty low, right? Like that to me is like the laziness factor ultimately inside of what it is that we're doing. Right? So here I have this guy telling me to do stuff that I don't want to do. I'm doing it anyway, and I'm not getting a result like the one I want. Ultimately, that I desire to get out of it. I'm getting a result where like I'm hitting the standard quotas, but I'm over here saying like I don't want to just make $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. I want to make $500,000. I want to make $1,000,000. Like I don't want to be held to a standard or have a ceiling over my head. I need glass. I need to break through it. So I started to sit back and study. Well, what's everybody doing? Well, 9 out of 10 copier salesmen all do it the same. They walk in with a site seller. They have a black suit on, they've got a white tie, they've got the slick back hair, whatever the case, right? They're literal stereotypes of salespeople. And I started to say, what if I just started there? If I just like took this standard and said, how do I make this feel less boring, transactional, and just, you know, petty, even like I like as if I'm just trying to go and make money. But instead, if I were to say, like, well, now I'm trying to build a lifestyle of wealth. Right. Oh, no, I'm trying to build a reputation that people will actually want to be around. I'm trying to build happiness and I'm trying to build fruit that actually like isn't rotten or like a shitty mango, but like a really good banana. Right. It was the thought process. Like, I don't want to settle for lesser fruit. I want nicer fruit as well, too. So for me, that's where I begin, because look, the monotony of the work is always going to suck. Like, just because we send crumpled letters and all these crazy fun things in the mail to our prospects doesn't mean that there's a monotonous side to the work. Stuffing an envelope over and over again with a crumpled up piece of paper is not exciting. I'm not sitting around like having a party at my house with 90 of my friends stuffing letters, getting drunk. That's a really good idea, though. I need to write that one down real quick, actually. But the point is that it's not fun. Like, the work itself is never going to be something that's fun, but you can love the work, right? If you are understanding what the work is giving you as far as an outcome is concerned. And so it becomes less transactional, less monotonous, less of a Debbie Downer type activity. If we just change the belief system by starting with the ultimate desire of what it is that we want to get out of this and what are the standards that we can crush and not have to live by, because being rebellious, no pun intended, is fun. It is, no matter how you spin that. I mean, as kids, we all did it. We were told, don't climb that tree, and we climbed it anyway. And shoot, we might have fallen and broken our wrist, but we still climbed the tree, and it was fun before we broke our wrist, right? But the point is like doing things different than everybody else, even if it feels scary as an adult because of the way that we've developed, is fun. It always is. And the more that we can get back to that type of mindset and less of this, like, man, I don't know if I could do what you do. It feels so transactional. Like, that in and of itself is a damning belief. Just expressing that tells me that the person saying those things needs a lot of inner work. They need a better life, you know, more so than anything else. And that will explain, you know, ultimately why people look at what you guys do, or what people like I do, or people like copier sales, IT sales, what Lewis Sanford even does, right? And they'll say, you know, just, I couldn't do what you do. It just, there's, it seems so monotonous, you know, it seems like so transactional, right? Like, no one understands until they actually get into this headspace and are living it on a daily basis. And usually those types of statements, to wrap that up, are the ones that make me go, well, this is why I exist, because I don't believe this. Like, I believe that Jack and Zach do something absolutely stupendous for the sales community. And ultimately what you do for businesses is the thing that everyone hates to do, but here you are loving it. And that will infect other people to say, well, like, well, why can't we love it too? And if they want to challenge that narrative in the status quo in the first place.
Beautiful. And then in your own life, when you started to have more of that rebellious outlook and try things that no one else was trying, how long until you saw a result that made you think, okay, there's something in this?
You know, it's funny. I got a result on the first try. I think it was the best learning lesson for me, actually, because it also was the hardest thing for me to do, because I kept saying to myself, so here, just to understand my background, I toured in a band, I played heavy metal, I was an artist, I was an entertainer, right? And then here I am selling copy machines. And so the first idea I had for a marketing piece, it was like, I've met these people at this point. Like, they're nothing like a crowd at a heavy metal show in the middle of, you know, Orlando, Florida, right? Like, it's a completely different audience. I'm not sure how this will be received. And I struggled with it. It took me a couple weeks even to ultimately decide that I was going to pull it off. And then in the parking lot, it took me like an hour. Like, I almost wimped out in the parking lot and was like, maybe I'll try it another day, right? And I actually used it. The best part, I think this is the reason I got a result, honestly, is I did it in the hardest place I could possibly do it, too. I did it to a lady that had used the F word on me to tell me to leave her office just 2 weeks before. So in my mind, I thought, she might remember me also. So this could be the perfect experiment, right? Because this could open a door that I didn't open prior to, using the same concept, right? I'm walking in your office to try and meet somebody that I need to know, right? But I have this new medium with me. So I finally walked in and I just let go and I let loose, and she read the letter. She went, got the doctor. She came back. She looked me in the eye and was like, she'll be up in just a couple minutes. That was a really good marketing piece. And the lady came up, I met the doctor. She ended up buying from me several months later. It was timing, right? Timing was great. Everything worked out, but I didn't get a big head in that moment and say, oh, this will work every time. What I realized is I was in the right place, that the time was right, that these were the type of people that I wanted to be around and needed to be around to try and execute on these types of concepts in the first place. What are their roles in the organization, as an example? What are their personalities? As I left, I wrote those types of things down. Seems like this person's very meticulous about numbers, about the details. Seems like this one's more of a whimsical outlook on life. They were a little bit more hands-off, a little bit more like, whatever you think, you know, like, I would take into account all those details in order to ultimately understand how to be better at this stuff in the first place. But after the first win, it probably took me about 19, 20 more to get a second win. Here's the part that motivated me the most, though. I love this question. I barely get this question. The part that motivated me the most is that the win was so much different. It wasn't just like, sure, we'll take an appointment. It was, hi, this is everything. And by the way, this marketing piece was really good, and it humanized you. It was good. And if you're anything like this marketing piece says you are, we want to do business with you. And like, that was just such a different response to me. Even when people told me, like, hey, man, I got 4 years left on my lease, but yeah, kudos. This, I've never seen a marketing piece that I didn't throw away or think was stupid. So, and I've been doing this for 20 years. I heard things like that. I heard so many compliments, like through rejection, even that it was like hard to really calculate it as rejection in the first place. So really for me, it was the compound effect around the level of positive responses when I would get one in the first place that made me understand that like, this is different. And if I'm getting, even if I'm getting every 20 calls, I get a yes, right? The old saying, even if I just get one yes every 20 calls, if a yes is this much better, I'm freaking down, you know, like I'm into that. Let's go.
And that it sounds like that's all you need. That one piece of evidence is enough to drive you forward. So Dale, we had Louis on our podcast recently, and he's very Willy Wonka-esque in a similar vein to you. And he opened up his locker and he gave us all his best secrets when it comes to marketing and direct mail. Could you show us behind the curtain? Could you give us some? I've seen some of the great ones on LinkedIn, but could you give us some of your favorites, some of the high performing ones, and why they work?
For sure. I think the best one that we have that I don't talk about much outside of our students that will be good for your audience is a cutting board.
That's why I'm using the money.
So we send a cutting board to our prospects to set a first meeting. And we actually use this inside of our systems, though, for different levels as well, too, like during the close. There's lots of different spots. But the original premise was to carve out some time, right, was kind of the messaging. That's where we started. We thought, like, well, it's a good little saying. It's kind of it kind of has like a little bit of less of a feel of emotion that we want it to have. But it's a good start, right? Because there is a difference between an experience and a gimmick. We do believe that. So that's, but this is where we started it. Well, what it evolved into when we did our first one is what we did is we looked up, you know, a little bit more about the prospect themselves. There's a VP of sales, big company. They just gotten their Series A. It was like $55 million, something ridiculous like that. Like they were rolling a dough for sure. They had a lot of accounts that current customers, big ones as well too. So they were in the corporate space selling. So we figured this was a really good one to try this out on. So we, because it'd be hard to set the appointment, right? So we did a lot of research on the individual. We found out some very personal details, and we ended up turning the carving board into those personal details. So let's say that like the person played the guitar in a band. The carving board can come in the shape of a guitar. Let's say that they went to college at this university. Instead of sending them their alma mater or like a tumbler mug, you know, with it on it, they already have that. They get that every year for their donation of $10,000 or whatever, right? They don't have a carving board, right? A cutting board that's shaped like the state with like a star right where the stadium is, you know, like on the map. And a fun little note, you know, that goes along with it. They don't have things like their initials on the carving, on the cutting boards either. So we had adapted this idea of like, what's something that somebody wouldn't buy themselves, but that they would use practically as a first touch piece, you know, because we've got lots of weird, crazy things that no one would ever reuse, but we thought this one would be like good for, you know, more sustainability, if you will. And just being, again, like something practical to use. So on top of it, we send additional touches, right? Like, so there comes the cutting board. There is the message of carving out time. But then we send a recipe book for, you know, like making donuts. But the donuts are like hiring the sales rebellion to help you sell more, right? And there's like sugar and there's yeast and there's like the special ingredient that grandma only could put into it, like a drop of her blood from her pinky finger, you know, and then there was fake knives that came as well too. So people do things like bribe with like some Cutcos. Oh, we sent some like rubber knives that like literally can't be used at all. And just like messaging with all these things around like this ultimate identity of building the relationship with us and or just say no and like we'll stop sending you this shit was kind of like the idea. And it's how most rebels run the system. But what happened is that, you know, we had one guy, I think he made somewhere in the ballpark of $480,000 in commission for the year, and prior to he'd made like 120. And it was from conversions from his cutting board campaigns. And he was doing like 10 at a time and setting 5 to 6 meetings. And the 5 to 6 meetings were getting a 70% close rate. And, wow. And so it became like wildfire for this dude inside of this organization. And so we've seen it pick up in different areas in that case. That's one of like the more practical things that we do. But some people have probably seen the sushi box. I post that every once in a while. I post a video of it. So we send a sushi box to people, and inside of it is a letter. It goes with our letter campaign, though. So it's actually like the fourth or fifth touch in the sequence. It's not the first. So like it's almost like a finale to an extent, or hey, I can get better at this if you need me to concept. But inside the sushi box, and the sushi box has got your logo on it, there's like lots of little things that you could do. And really what we always express is like, learn about the person that you're sending this stuff to, and it'll be a literal slam dunk for you. Because if their initials, as an example, are like on the box, if their hometown that they grew up is one of the pictures, you know, like if there's all these small things that you can find out about people and incorporate into these touches, it makes it better. But it comes with the chopsticks. It comes with the fortune cookie. You crack it open. It says, you will do business with the Sales Rebellion in the future and be very happy. You know, like all these fun little things that just make it whimsical and silly and highly experiential. And essentially says like, hey, I'm not into the you know, as the CTA, as most people like to call it. I'm not into bribing people, but I would love to grab lunch with you. And if you like sushi, even better, right? But if not, you can get the noodles when we go out. So there's always like a little bit of a tie in to what it is ultimately you want to achieve with this person. So which takes it away from that identity of being a gimmick and gives it purpose and meaning for the individual that's receiving it. These slap like 5 out of 10 times, right? Is usually what I tell people. Like they're not silver bullets. They don't work every time. You'll still get people telling you things like, take me off your effing list. Like, it's not like suddenly everything changes. You're still going to get a lot of the stereotypes. But the amount of positivity that comes from the five that do say yes to some capacity. Because remember, no is a yes. When it's given in the right way, it's a great response. So if I can get someone to tell me no because I have a great relationship and my brother-in-law works there, I know exactly how to stay in touch with this person for the next 10 years, right? Which is like every Thanksgiving to write a note to them and say, hey, just making sure you're not fighting with your brother-in-law this year and that you need my help. And again, like if I can get the right kind of no from people to understand the environment, then I can change the game. And that's really what the creative outreach is about. It's about understanding the environment better, getting more information from the people as they respond, whether it's positive or negative. So that helps you to understand where you'll waste your time and other people's time as well, and where your time will be well served and more fruitful by sticking around.
Great. Dale, it's very rare that we speak to people that are so passionate about sales. So thank you for taking the time. I guess if people want to check you out, check out the Sales Rebellion, get in touch, pick your brains, where can they find you? How can they do it?
The best place is LinkedIn, linkedin.com/IN/copywarrior. But they can go to the salesrebellion.com, message us there, fill out a type form, come join our free community. We've got lots of resources. And if they just want to like laugh and hang out on social, I'm on Instagram, TikTok, you know, with all the cool kids. So come all find cool me. Kids. Dale Dupree into Google and come find me.
There you go. Dale, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm glad that we didn't kick off at each other this time. There was no fights, just love. Cheers, thank boys. You, Dale.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Dale.
Thank you.